This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I thought we lost puck battles. I got on the wrong side of the puck and poor defensively that led to goals against. They beat us to pucks, and you know their sustained ozone time sometimes led to great opportunities, and we couldn't get people off the ice.
High goals against total, still a problem, especially on the road for Buffalo as they kind of close out the road schedule the way they started this year. And to say 41 games was a challenge in that regard away from home would be an understatement. 7-4, they fall to the Lightning yesterday, Marty, as we start the final regular season week here on Sabres Live.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the intermission, we always show the puck possession, offensive zone, neutral zone, defensive zone. And when we showed the first period puck possession, like Tampa, despite the fact that Buffalo scored a couple of goals late, had almost a minute and a half more puck possession. And then what happens in the second period? You give up four goals. Why? Because Tampa is in your zone a lot. You have the long change. You can't change. That's all Lindy Ruff was saying post-game, is that that second period really, really kind of sank the Sabres in, you know, the way that they weren't able to get the puck out to defend Tampa. But to me, that's... So I tried to look at both sides of the things. Like the Sabres went on a stretch where they had won 8 out of 9, right? So, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, the only loss they had was a bad one to the Flyers. But you go, okay, let's take some positive out of it. And a lot of people are, you know, commenting on social media like, that's garbage time. It doesn't matter. Okay, but I'm looking at some of the improvement that you're doing. But then you have the weekend in Florida that you did have. You lose in a shootout to the Florida Panthers, but they had... like no Tkachuk, no Bennett, no Reinhart, no Barkov, no Ekblad. Like it.
No Bobrovsky.
No Bobrovsky. You're right. So you're like, okay, you played, you battled. You can only play the team that's in front of you.
Correct.
But you know it's a 2-2 game, and they didn't have any of their firepower. So you're like, okay, why don't you go into Tampa, because they're gonna have Kucherov and they're gonna have Point and they have Hedman, although they played Jonas Johansson, and shut him down and go in and say, we're going to shut him down. And that didn't happen. So that's disappointing, being that it's game 80 and the same results and the same message was, well, we didn't manage the puck. We didn't have a lot of energy, but you need to be smarter with the puck. And so it's a little disappointing because there was a turn for some good in games. And then this weekend kind of went to nowhere.
Right. Which leaves them with two at home, including a game against Toronto tomorrow where the Leafs, you know, can lock up their desired position, which is number one in the Atlantic. You're the one that has lived these experiences as far as trying to muster up the right amount of pushback, readiness, competitiveness for such games, especially on the heels of a lopsided loss in game 80. What does reality look like for you tomorrow from this group?
Well, reality is you better show up, because Toronto has a chance to clinch, and you know they're going to come, you know, running for that spot. And but another thing that I don't know, maybe I'm getting old, Duffer. I'm getting old. Some of the things that I probably said as a player, I'm listening now around the league, or when the Sabres are saying it, and I'm thinking, Doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, but okay, I'll play along with it. The guys are saying we got a couple of big games left to the season. You know what? Like, they're all big games. There's 82 big games a year, and it doesn't matter. Like, right now, if you tell me they're big games, I'm going to tell you, no, they're not. Big games are the first two of the season, game 12, game 15. The game against Colorado that you were up 3-0 that you lost, those are big games. But every game should be big. And it should be like, okay, we're going to be really good. Look, you're not going to be good 82 games out of the year. But it shouldn't have to be a point of emphasis. Oh, we got a couple of big games at home, and the one against Toronto Tuesday is big. No. You know what? Every game is big. That one against Tampa yesterday was big. It was big for Tampa. It needed to be big for you. I get the rivalry. I get the fans showing up at KeyBank Center supporting the Leafs or whatnot. But every game is big. Maybe I'm getting old to the fact that I just don't latch on to those anymore. Like, oh, we got a big game Tuesday against the Leafs. No, you know what? Columbus was a big game the other day. Florida was a big game. Tampa was a big game. There was three big games. They ended up being three losses on the road trip.
Right. And your definition of big can be skewed, twisted, inferred in many different ways. The fact of the matter is Columbus needed it. They got it. Florida needed it. They got it. Tampa needed it. They got it. And so
now Toronto wants it. And, you know, if you keep rolling the same thing, like it's big games, but that's, you know.
Because of how poorly I finished the show last night, I'm obligated to pay particularly close attention to details. So sorry for throwing you under the bus 3.5 minutes in, but it was 4-0 against Colorado when they lost that game, not 3-0.
Oh, yeah. At one point, it was 3-0, so I was partly right there, and then it got to be 4-0. So, yes.
Yeah. Anyways.
It makes it worse. It was a big game until it got to be 4-0. But you're right. Yeah. But look, so what are you saying? Thursday is not a big game because it's a Flyers. No, I'm not saying you. But if you say Tuesday's a big game against the Leafs, so Thursday's not a big game against the Flyers, it's one of 82, and they're all big. So I don't know. That's the way I see it.
Well, and again, there's nothing we can say to shape tomorrow's game any differently and or have any sort of impact on the situation. But I guess deep down what I'm asking is, like, what is your expectation here from the home side based on what they will be confronting tomorrow?
Number one, it doesn't matter if it was Toronto or not. You're coming home after the road trip, and the game against Tampa was not a good game. Mm-hmm. There better be a spark, right, to say, hey, you know, we have two games left of the season. And you look at players. Maybe you have 30 shifts left, right? Maybe you have 15 shifts on tomorrow and 15 the next game. Maybe you have 40. Maybe you have 50 if you're Rasmus Dahlin, 60 shifts or whatever. But that's what your season comes down to.
Yeah.
And if you're like anybody on the roster, you're like, I'm not going to waste a shift. I'm not going to go out there and come back to the bench and say, man, that was bad. Like, no, it can't happen. So the fact that it's Toronto maybe puts a little bit more into that, but that's the way I would look at it. You know, I always felt like the end of the year was, as a player, maybe a way to just go into the summertime thinking, okay, I can do certain things. But right now, all season long, we know that Tage Thompson can score. He's proven it. He's had a great season. We know that Tuck can score. We know that Dahlin can put up points. We know that Peterka can do what he's done. McLeod has been good. Zucker's been, like, we know a lot of things. But it's the other players that are still a big question mark. I'm like, you can't go out there and take a shift off.
Right.
And it starts in Toronto, and it's got to continue in Philly. That's the message. That's what has to happen in the last two games.
They're 0-2 against Toronto this year. They've given up a lot of goals in those two games. I mean, how do you – there's not really a lot of reason to focus on how the defense corps will look right now in the presumed absence of Owen Power, because that's a for down the road situation. But in a preparing for the moment, based on just allowing 7 to Tampa and what you've had happen to you against Toronto this year, like, what is the approach here?
Well, the approach is you got to try to find a little bit of a balance on the back end. And balance was there for many years, many games, where you had Dahlin and you had Power and you had Byram on all three different pairings. Mm-hmm. You know, the Sabres try something in the second period because it obviously did not start the way you wanted to. So they put Dahlin with Byram, and then, you know, unfortunately Samuelson and Clifton were on the ice for a lot of the goals against. Mm-hmm. So that's not good. And then they went back with Dahlin and Samuelson and, you know, Byram and Clifton. But I would like to see, like, again, I know what I've got from Dahlin, mm-hmm. and I like Dahlin with Byram. I think that those two played well when they played together. And I feel like it was of necessity that you split them up. But if you want to be a good team, you got to have that top pair that's going to be like your 25, 27 minutes a night. And I like Dahlin with Byram maybe doing that. So if you look at Toronto coming in, you have last change, you have, you know, made a control of the matchups. Maybe you go back to Dahlin and Byram and you say, okay, you guys are going to have the Matthews line and let's go. Let's put it on a, you know, you kind of dangle the carrot in front and you say, go ahead, go earn it. Go show me you can do it. Same thing with other guys. So the Power injury is going to hurt, you know, the balance on the back end. But I still think that I want to see who can emerge as a top pair. Because if you don't have a stud top pair, and most teams have that, right, then how do you transition to next year game one, Duffer, if you don't have that top pair, you're still trying to piece it together.
Would you call someone up from Rochester?
It crossed my mind. It crossed my mind to say, okay, maybe you call somebody up, but you got two games left. You got Bryson already signed for next year. So,
who do you sit? It's not about Bryson. It's about what you have in Rochester. So why not bring them into a heated situation, like, and I use heated in quotations and loosely, whatever. You know what I'm saying here. But like, it's an environment. At the very least, it's an environment that is
different.
It's
an experience.
Right? And exactly. So if you firmly believe Ryan Johnson has perhaps outgrown the AHL, and this is a comment you hear quite a bit,
yeah,
then why wouldn't you, and I'm not saying they haven't, I'm just saying, would you bring him into this situation, or would you do something even more dramatic and bring in one of the lesser experienced young defensemen just to give them a future taste of it? Like, it sounds like I'm throwing stuff all over the place here, but you've seen these canvases painted over the years with a splash here and a splat there. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to it, right? So I'm like, we know what's in Rochester. We know they're going to finish second in the division. Mm-hmm. We know they're likely going to open at home on April the 25th, which unfortunately is going to be the same night the Bandits open their playoffs at home. So once again, I'm going to have to clone myself. But anyway,
yes,
these things aside, like, what would you do here?
So it's funny you say that, because there's only one option, and it would be to call up Ryan Johnson. I'm not bringing in Novikov or Komarov in a situation where they would play their first NHL game in that situation. And I don't really know that it helps your team. If you want to bring him up on Thursday against the Flyers, a different thing. You get him a game. Tuesday, I would say you probably need someone that has had some experience at the NHL level, and Ryan Johnson's had that experience. But I come back to, okay, and I know it's not about Bryson, but Bryson's signed for next year. And, you know, Bernard Docker has done a decent job. And, you know, you go up and down the lineup of what you've got. And I think you probably are going to say, okay, we're going to stick with the six that we have here. We're going to play them against Toronto. Maybe somebody gets called up as an extra for Tuesday game, just so that you have an extra in case something happens, you know, during the day, somebody gets sick. But I wouldn't be putting them into this situation. Now, even getting called up may be a nice boost, because, I mean, I remember when I first got called up, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm going to play some games in the NHL. But then you also say, I'm going to make a little bit more money. So if you're Ryan Johnson, you're saying, you know what? I'll get called up for 48 hours. Who cares? I'll make a little bit more money. That's great. Like, that's an added bonus. I don't think they would play, but if Owen Power is going to, you know, be out for a while and they're going to get some more testing done by the doctors today, And I think you call up somebody, maybe even just to be there, get a little bit of the experience of practice, make a little money, and then go back to Rochester.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget Rathbone did get called up recently and didn't get to play, and it was very brief. I would have him on the list too, honestly.
Yeah, no, yeah, maybe that, maybe that's the same situation. You just call him up to be an extra in case and have a couple of practice, and you go. But again, like, and people say, really, it makes that much of a difference? Yeah, when you're making $85,000 in the American Hockey League and then you make a prorated $950,000 in the NHL, that 1 or 2 days' pay, it adds a, you know, a couple of thousands, and it's nice. Yeah, I remember I went and bought myself a new suit at Hugo Boss the 1 year because it was great. And now I would go to Napoli and do the same thing because I'd have a little bit of money in my pocket.
You still have that suit?
I don't. It was a black suit. And you know what? I bought it because I got called up a couple of games, and then I had the AHL All-Star game. And I was like, I really need, and I made a little bit more money. So I went and got myself a black suit, black Hugo Boss suit.
From?
At the mall, at the Boss store. Yeah, the Galleria. And Pascal, that's now my guy at Napoli's, used to work at Hugo Boss. So every time I went there, he would take care of me. Now I know. I go to Napoli's, and Pascal is like, I know exactly what works for you. Boom, boom, boom. It's easy. But yeah, I remember going, you know, black, sharp, you know, nice suit. Mm-hmm. And that's when, I believe that's when Phil Mickelson was being sponsored by Hugo Boss. So I was like, this is great because, you know, I mean, I never bought a Boss suit before. I used to buy them, you know, I just, you know, the rack or whatever that was. I used to buy them at Moore's in Canada, Duffer, you know what that is. So, you know, I would go get my suits
before you had
there.
The Porsche?
That was before I had the Porsche. Okay. So the Porsche was, it was not just a day's call up. It was a year being in the NHL to be able to afford that.
Anyway.
So anyway, but did they call somebody up? Look, Lindy Ruff said Owen Power is going to be out a while. Yeah. And he's going to get some more, you know, tests done today, but it did not look good on both legs. So I don't know if it's right knee, left leg, whatever, but it didn't look good.
So that being said, maybe real quick on the Amherst, they got three this week, Wednesday, Friday at home. Saturday, they're in Toronto, close out the regular season. They are locked in the two spot. They are going to get the number three opponent once things roll around. That is still to be determined. Could be Syracuse, Toronto, Cleveland. Tell you what, you and I were vaguely referencing this yesterday off air. So Belleville still has an outside chance of making
very outside, but yes.
They have three games remaining, all of them against Laval.
Oh boy.
Now it's a great time to catch Laval because Laval is home and cool and has nothing to play for, but still, if you had to pick any of your opponents at this point, I don't think they would want to be doing that. So anyway,
it's like Montreal. Montreal's on the other side. Like, they can clinch their playoff spot tonight, and they got Chicago coming in. It's like, thank you. Like, we have one of the worst teams.
Are they, though?
What's that?
Is it the ultimate trap?
It could be, but I'm just saying, like, I'd rather be in a Montreal situation to have Chicago come into your building there than Belleville having to play the top team in the AHL and having to win three to get in. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be a trap, and, you know, you're a little tight and a little tense, and, you know, this is big for Montreal. The fans going to be going nuts. Demidov is going to play. It's like there's a lot going on, and then it could fall right flat. Do I anticipate it to fall flat? No. Montreal has been able to respond every time they've had that situation this year, and that's why they're in a playoff spot. But yeah, I would think that Montreal much rather play Chicago than having to play, let's see, Winnipeg on this Monday night.
It's really the only game of value, substance, meaning. All due apologies to the other five games, but when you look at Montreal in the standings, and you look at the fact Columbus has won four in a row, to actually keep the heat on here. This is completely unexpected based on how poor things were going for the Jackets. Columbus has Philadelphia and the Islanders left. Montreal has Chicago tonight. A win clinches them the spot. A single point does not. And then they have Carolina. So what...
And Carolina is already locked into home ice advantage against New Jersey.
There is a Carolina-Montreal history that I think would spice that final game up, even if it's in my mind and it's from the last 20 years. That's fine. I'll hang on it.
Well, it is a little bit from the last 20 years. You're thinking of Corey Stillman's goal, right? Overtime in Montreal.
Just anything. Offer sheets.
Like, there's a lot. Yes.
Yeah, like, it just feels like a thing. And that's whatever. I mean, that's neither here nor there. But, like, you've already laid it out. Like, you think Chicago's not going to do anything tonight, and this is going to be Montreal. Like, part of me, though, is... And I almost never have even thought of them this year because of how bad the Hawks have been. But if you're Connor Bedard, can you muster anything tonight in what will be a massively watched telecast?
Oh.
And again, this has nothing to do with anything. Like, if a player ever cares who's watching on TV, then shame on them, in my opinion. But for the sake of framing this opportunity for the future of the Blackhawks and all the rest of it that is greatly unknown at this point in time. And they do maybe have their goalie of the future in Spencer Knight right now. And a whole lot of young players, because all the old guys are retiring and not playing anymore. Like, what can the Hawks do tonight?
Well, I'll say this, Duffer. Every time we played on Saturday night in Toronto or Montreal, not so much Ottawa, but more Toronto, Montreal, it was one of the cliches in the locker room. Where else would you rather be on a Saturday night? Hockey Night in Canada. But when you stepped on the ice, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter that it was Hockey Night in Canada or not. Like, you just played the game. But I do feel if you're Connor Bedard, you're looking at this and I'm going to have a lot of friends and family that are going to be watching. It's the one game. Let's go. I want to go out there, put on a show. You're right. Like, Pat Maroon's retiring. Alec Martinez retiring. These guys are not playing. They're done. Like, there's a lot of young guys that are going to get opportunities. Would I put down money on Montreal Canadiens minus 290 in this game tonight? 100% no. Like, I don't think there's value, and you never know what could happen. But if you're Connor Bedard, I do some Montreal radio once in a while. I was asked a question today. If you had to pick between Nick Suzuki and Connor Bedard, which one do you pick?
There's and my like answer seven was... 7 years between them?
There is a lot. But right now, right? Like, it's not a fair question because Connor Bedard in 7 years from now could be like a superstar stud. But I think Nick Suzuki is right now a superstar in the National Hockey League that, you know, is gaining traction. But if you're Nick Suzuki and you're Connor Bedard and you face off, right? And then you're Connor Bedard, you're like, I want to beat that guy. And then there's Ivan Demidov, who's going to get a standing ovation. Connor Bedard goes, I was the number one overall pick 2 years ago. This guy was fifth overall last year. Like, I'm the stud here. Like, I think there's a lot that can fire up Connor Bedard. And if there has to be something, it could be tonight against Montreal. But I still think Montreal wins and clinches.
If I ask you that seven more times before the end of the show, or is Chicago going to get one vote of confidence from you or not?
No.
No. Suzuki's only 25, a little younger than I thought.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Like, they made that Max Pacioretty trade to Vegas, right, and got Nick Suzuki in the deal.
Yeah.
Suzuki ends up being the captain. Pacioretty was the captain back then. Yeah. And
It
worked for both. The Vegas Golden Knights wanted an impact player right away, and they got Pacioretty. Suzuki is a stud right now playing with Caulfield and Slafkovský. So, yeah, it's worked for both. But long-term, the Canadians are saying, okay, we got this. But Pacioretty and the Vegas Golden Knights were fine back then.
Suzuki needs 3 points to catch Brandon Hagel, who has now nicely vaulted into the top 10 in league scoring.
Yeah, well, that's... You know, Hagel and Point and Kucherov, and we've seen it. They've been pretty good. But so my big thing right now, when I look at, you know, the players, like we talk about Thompson. I mean, can Thompson get to 40? He's second in goals right now.
Third.
You know,
Nylander.
Yeah, Nylander got an extra one. Sorry. Nylander's at 45. Thompson's at 44. Can he get, you know, 45 and more? Obviously, two games left to get it done. But when you look around the National Hockey League, Connor McDavid, despite missing all these games, is 1 point away from 100. Mitch Marner is also 1 point away from 100.
9 points in the last three games for McDavid.
Yeah.
I have
maybe
bad
he needed
news.
That break. He needed to get healthy again.
I have bad news for the Kings. I was going to save it for later. They have zero chance. The Oilers are going to roast them for a fourth straight year.
No, that's not true.
Dreisaitl will come back rested and healthy. McDavid is flying, and there is no answer for the Kings. And you know how much I love the Kings. They cannot, they will not win this matchup. So
okay, well, I would put money on the Kings in that one.
Okay,
and I
good.
Think I'd be getting a little bit of juice on top of it. So I'm gonna say the Kings will be... but if you ask me 10 times, I may flip-flop 6 times. So that's my one compromise for today.
Yeah. They've lost in 7, in 6, and in 5 in the last 3 years, have the Kings to the Oilers. So I'm not boldly claiming it's going to be a sweep, but I just, to your point, like the only factor in all of this to me is a scintillating McDavid. And I just think he is, and look, LA's had, like, I don't know how closely people are paying attention, but like Kevin Fiala has rocketed up the goal scoring list in the NHL. You know, Kempe, Kopitar, Byfield, Fogel, like they have, and the much talked about just a couple of weeks ago, Kuzmenko, they have really, really, really good depth right now. Mm-hmm. I just don't know, after all the challenges that the Oilers have seemingly navigated through this year, I have to think that comes with a sort of magic when the playoffs begin and you look around at a room and you see Dreisaitl and McDavid ready to go, when many times throughout the year you were probably like, I don't know if these guys are going to be ready.
They didn't look good for a while there.
Right?
They looked like they were banged up. And
yeah,
you know, who knows how Dreisaitl comes back. Like he got hurt, missed, came back.
I mean,
the
Ekholm thing's going to be enormous for them, obviously. And
yeah,
their goaltending, potentially enormous as well. But, yeah.
But okay, so you look at the Sabres have 4 guys that have 60 or more points. You got Thompson over 70. Got Dallin, Tuck, and who's the other one? Jeez, I just had it in front of me.
What was it?
Over 60 points this year. It's Peterka. So you got those 4. You got Tuck, Dallin, Peterka, and Thompson over 60 points this year. The LA Kings only have 2 guys, Kempe and Kopitar, right? And so what has been the key for the Kings? It's their defense, their goaltending. They're suffocating the other teams defensively. So this, to me, like LA Edmonton is going to be like, okay, can the Oilers bring enough offense to overcome what the LA Kings' strength is, their defensive side of the game. So, you know, you've got some really interesting matchups that are already decided in the first round of the playoffs with Dallas and Colorado, with New Jersey, Carolina. Everything else needs to be figured out. But, the Flames are still alive. The Flames are still alive and trying to catch up Minnesota and St. Louis. So who knows? Maybe they make it happen.
Lots to get to on that front as we continue here on Sabres Live. 2 games this week for Buffalo to close out the regular season, including Fan Appreciation Night on the 17th. That is Thursday. Philadelphia is in. Opportunity for you to receive Jason Zucker's game-worn jersey on the ice after the game, along with a couple of tickets. Visit sabres.com/jersey to win that. We're back after this. Who does not want Columbus in there?
I'm not saying it's not as sexy, right? Montreal is. There's a lot more Montreal fans around. I get what you're saying. The story of the Columbus Blue Jackets, their resiliency, the heartbreaks, the loss of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau, the injuries to so many of their players they battled through. I think it would be a great story. And it's one that I like, the underdog story. I think that if it was Columbus against pretty much any team in the National Hockey League, I would say, okay, there's probably more Columbus fans. But because it's Montreal, I think there's probably more fans that want Montreal in.
Just going to let it linger. Go Hawks, go.
I mean, even our great original franchise owner, Seymour Knox, loved the Canadiens. So I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, there's a lot of fans of hockey that still, even if though they're not fans of the Montreal Canadiens, still like the Canadiens because of the attachment to maybe some memories as a child, or, you know, just the maybe the rivalry with the Sabres and whatnot. That's what it is.
I'm just going to letting you carry this here.
Just because I didn't say I didn't want Columbus to make it. Look, if it was between Columbus and a lot of other teams, I'd want to say Columbus. But I think Montreal has been a good story this year. And look, one of the stories that you have talked about, like, from the beginnings, and Montreal is not a bad team. Now, were they playing badly? Yeah, they were playing very bad early in the season. But they changed the way they play a little bit, which should be a lesson for a lot of teams. You can adjust the way you play in season. It doesn't have to be like, oh, our systems are set and we're good. New York Rangers, our systems are set. We're not going to change that, right? Like, well, it sunk you. And if at some point you had adjusted, maybe, just maybe, you'd be in the playoffs. Montreal did adjust. Montreal went from Marty Saint-Louis wanting to play strict man-on-man in the defensive zone. A lot of chasing around, giving up a ton of goals. I almost said another bad words here. But I'm looking at it and saying, you needed to adjust, and you adjusted. Did they do a complete 180? No. But they made some adjustment in their game, and it has helped them.
Montreal and Chicago tonight, the biggest game on the schedule tomorrow, if it's still relevant. Columbus is at Philadelphia. And notably, the West wildcard picture could get finalized. They're down to one game each, and I can't imagine the pressure for St. Louis and for Minnesota. The Blues host Utah. The 12-game winning streak is a distant memory. They've lost three in a row. Yes, they control their fate, but boy, it can't feel good. And Minnesota, for all their ups and downs, they have Anaheim coming in and, you know, would have presumably feel like they're in a pretty good spot. But right now, Minnesota leads Calgary by three. St. Louis leads Calgary by two. Both the Blues and Wild control their destiny. And yet Calgary keeps
winning. Well, the Blues do if they win in regulation, but if they were to win in overtime.
That's the definition of controlling your destiny, Marty.
But a lot of time it's more like, and I get what you, I just want to make a little, because a lot of time you say controlling your destiny, win a game and you're in, right? But this is a win a game in regulation, because if you win it in overtime and Calgary wins both of their games in regulation, St. Louis, even though you won your game, you're out, because you need a regulation win to get in. That's the little caveat here. And that's why when you look at Columbus, if Montreal was to get a point tonight and they don't get a point in their last game, and Columbus is still alive, because if they tied them and they win in regulation both of their games, they would have the tiebreaker. There's a little bit of a, you know, a wrinkle that could be thrown in depending on how the cards fall. But yeah, St. Louis, you win in regulation and you're in.
So what's the wildest wild card scenario that will unfold in the next couple of days? Who makes it that most people think won't make it?
I, you know what? Because I look at Minnesota, St. Louis, and Calgary, and I think that St. Louis is still the better team of the three, in my opinion. They got Thomas and Carew. Parayko just came back. They got Bennington. I look at the St. Louis Blues, and I think they are the best out of those three teams. But they're probably right now the one that they need that regulation win, or things could tighten up a little bit. Second, I think the Flames are the second best team out of the three right now, the way they're playing. And if they get in, that's because they would have won four in a row. They've got two in a row, and they would win the next two. They would go into the playoffs winning four in a row, coming from behind. I think the Flames, and they found a way to score a few goals, although, man, what a disappointing overtime loss when they were up 3-1 late in the game against Anaheim. But, you know, imagine if they would have won that one. It would be a point closer. But the Flames are, to me, the second best team out of the three. And Minnesota, despite the fact that they are in wild card number one right now and are, you know, with 1 point, would be getting into the playoffs. They don't need a regulation win. They just need a point. They just need to go to OT. Eriksson Ek came back at 4 goals his first game, at 0 points the last two. Kaprizov came back at 2 goals and an assist his first game, has only 1 assist the last two. Like, I think Minnesota is the team that's struggling the most out of those three right now.
They had a heroic win on Saturday in overtime.
I know. An 8-7 win that gets... well, no. Oh, that was against Vancouver, right?
Vancouver. Yeah.
I think you meant
looked,
like the one
like
against...
It looked like they were toast, and it was a really impressive rally.
I still don't think Minnesota, and this is just me, I think out of the three... I think they would be the third team right now that I would say, okay, how do you rank them 1, 2, 3? I would put Minnesota 3. But you know what? It doesn't matter. All you got to do is get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You press the reset button and boom, there you go. Maybe Philip Gustafson kind of goes out and, you know, puts up a wall and steals a game or two. He had to get pulled the other day, but they pulled him to give him a break so they could bring him back against Vancouver, which he did a good job in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Saturday for the Blues was tough. They got a point, but they had 5 chances to win it in the shootout. First one was with a save that they didn't get, and then they had 4 chances from their shooters to win it before ultimately losing in round 7. So, again, it wouldn't have changed everything completely, but it wouldn't have them staring at 3 straight losses going into their final game either. So,
And against the Kraken, that's the same thing. Like, you have Chicago and Montreal tonight, you have the Kraken, you've had San Jose, Anaheim, like, you've had teams that have been like, oh, mm-hmm. let's play spoiler a little bit. And the Kraken took a point away from St. Louis in that game.
So again, tonight it's Chicago, Montreal that all eyes are on. And other than that, just some tinkering as far as, you know, potential home ice gained and things like that across the league. Buffalo, Toronto tomorrow. There was one other thing I went. Oh, well, just more within the division and the fact we saw Connor Geeky last night for Tampa, mm-hmm. who, you know, could play a little bigger role here for the Lightning based on Bjorkstrand injury and the fact that he's earned this call-up. But his brother, Morgan, has 32 goals for the Bruins this year. He's a RFA amidst a very changing landscape for the Boston Bruins. It's also relevant because the Sabres have enough RFAs that are going to be talking points, and every player affects the market. Morgan's 26. He'll be 27 this summer.
Yep.
He's gone from 9 to 17 to 32 goals over the last 3 years. Makes a couple of million dollars. Like, what is, like, Morgan Geeky is now a top 30 goal scorer in the NHL. What do we think this is going to translate to, and how is it going to impact the market?
Well, I think that, I mean, we've discussed offer sheets a lot on this show, especially with last year, you know, having St. Louis Blues offer sheet, Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg. And yes, I think that there is going to be some offer sheet movement this summer. Sabres have Peterka, Quinn, they have Byram, they have McLeod, who are all RFAs. I think that maybe Peterka and Byram could be offer sheet candidates, but the Sabres would probably match and move on. When you look at Morgan Geeky, this is the first time that he's had the season that he's had. So the AFP analytics projection when it comes to Geeky for his next contract was 4 years at $3.3 million. We can guarantee you that's not going to be anywhere near the $3.3 million. It, with 32 goals now, we're probably talking about 5+, right? I mean, but you got to be buyer beware on that one. So maybe a team was going to look at Geeky as an offer sheet candidate. Why? Because you can go high because he scored over 30 goals this year. You could say maybe it's $6 million. You think that a 35 goal scorer like Morgan Geeky could be at $6 million, and Boston saying, yeah, we still think he's more of a 20 goal scorer. We're not giving him $6 million. We let him walk. That's the kind of candidate that may be vulnerable, or a team that may be vulnerable for an offer sheet as somebody that's producing above the expectation. A team may take a chance to say, hey, we're going to give him a lot of money, hoping he stays at 30, 35, 40 goals, but another team thinks he's more of a 20-goal scorer.
Well, what do you think of him?
I think he is, the way that he's playing, he's playing with David Pastrnak on a team that doesn't have much else.
Right.
I think that the way Morgan Geeky has gradually gotten better every year, mm-hmm. I think he's a 30-goal scorer. So, you know, and 30 goals may mean between 27 and 34, right? Like, give or take a few goals here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So paying Morgan Geeky at the age of 26 going on 27 is last year before he's a UFA, paying him anywhere between $5.5 to $6 million, I don't think is crazy to think. So I mean, is Boston wanting to go there, or is it an offer sheet that's going to make that happen? That we, you know, we'll have to see in the offseason.
Just to circle back, the AFP projection was from a long time ago.
It was from Christmas, yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I think that when the season ends and we get those updated projection, it's going to be different. But then, obviously, if Morgan Geekie signs a contract at the end of the season, well, that could be a direct comparable for JJ Paterka, who has, you know, gone over 25 goals and over 60
JJ's
points.
Way younger and has had higher point totals.
But if I'm just saying that a comparable, because if Geekie, for
and
example, signs a $6 million contract, okay, on average a year, yeah, that's because that means JJ would be way above that, right? I mean, it's kind of a setting a floor. Wherever Geekie would be, would probably setting a low floor to where JJ's negotiation would be starting.
Yeah, I mean, Morgan's a third rounder from 2017, so he doesn't have age or draft pedigree on the same side of him as Paterka does, and doesn't have as big a body of work. I would say the Bruins need to not extend this any longer. I think five times five would work for both and be done with it long before we even get to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but that's just me. So.
No, and I get, and look, Geeky's not a candidate for a bridge deal because he's going to be a UFA. Paterka could be a candidate for a bridge deal or a arbitration deal just because, you know, maybe you're trying to buy yourself a little bit of time to be able to see where it is. I wouldn't do a bridge deal on JJ Paterka myself, but Geeky's not a candidate for that at all.
Best and worst. Marty is the king of this. And we're speaking of the weekend, of course, and nothing more. We're going to get into that when we come back. And also, Banditland is going to be springing back to life in night one of the NLL playoffs. That'll be April 25th. It's a Friday night. It's a 7:30 start. We're awaiting the opponent because, oh, I could talk for days about all the potential combinations that still exist with 1 week to go in the National Lacrosse League regular season. Just know this, the Bandits have punched their ticket to be the one seed throughout in their quest for a three-peat. And not only do I want to see you in Banditland, we can encourage you to get those playoff tickets now, bandits.com/tickets. Congratulations to the franchise for, after all this time, a record-setting season at the box office. Just completed their fifth sellout of the year, but overall attendance has never been seen at this level in the National Lacrosse League. Really incredible and well-deserved, obviously, from everybody inside of the Bandits organization. So they got one game to go. They're in Georgia this weekend. Maybe Dane Smith rewrites the record book from a scoring standpoint. Maybe Josh Byrne does the same. Those two and Matt Vince and on it goes have the Bandits in another great position. We're back after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It is time for Marty's best and worst of the weekend.
I'm going to need your help. We don't have a lot of time. Oh, we actually have a couple of minutes. Okay, I'll start with golf. I think that best and worst could all be put together with Rory McIlroy and the way that he played the last and final round at Augusta, winning the championship in extra holes, but man, there was some bad shots. There was some fantastic shots. Every moment, I was like, that's best of the weekend. No, that's worst of the weekend. That's Bryson DeChambeau, not so good. But yeah, what a fitting finish for Rory McIlroy at the Masters. So I'm going to say best because in the end he won, but there was a lot of best and worst altogether in there, Duffer.
You're allowed to take the final 80 seconds here also.
Okay, I am going to say worst of the weekend, which is also maybe a best, is Calvin DeHaan of the New York Rangers. When he was going to go on the ice for optional skate yesterday, he vented to the media a little bit saying, hey, how about how I've been treated here with the Rangers? It's beep. And then they're like, well, do you want to talk about it? He goes, yeah, we'll talk about it after I'm done with practice. And then he had an animated conversation with a member of the Rangers PR staff. And when he came back out, he says, we'll talk after the season's over when I have all the information. So He backtracked a little bit, but it just, you know, lent to show a little bit of light as to what this season has been for the Blue Shirts and the work that Chris Drury and Peter Laviolette and many more in New York have gotten to do for the rest of the year. You like that one. You went the old Chewbacca.
Take the optional.
Take the optional. Don't speak to the media and, you know, don't collect 200 and go past the goal. But anyway, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Bandits, first best of the weekend. Bandits, that was awesome. Another sellout.
Yeah, depth scoring was awesome. Honestly, there's so many things to get to. We'll probably touch a little more on Bandits throughout the week and obviously Sabres in the two final games of the regular season. We'll see you tomorrow.